Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Nothing helps someone sick in the hospital more than having loved ones or friends giving the support they need. It's not just visitors. It is someone who makes sure the patient is being looked after, cared for, and loved. Northumberland Hills Hospital is undertaking a groundbreaking initiative, starting now, that will make sure this happens. It is called the Essential Caregiver Pilot Program. It will empower up to 2 people to hold special status to work with the medical team helping the patients. Howard Goodfellow, an advisor to the program, and Jennifer Gillard, Vice President, Patient Experience, Public Affairs, and Strategic Partnerships at the hospital, will explain how it works and the benefits. Listen to see if this is something that will make a difference to a family member, a friend, or someone you know. I am absolutely delighted to have on the show today Howard Goodfellow, the care advisor to the Essential Care Partners Program, and Jennifer Gillard, the Vice President of Patient Experience, Public Affairs, and Strategic Partnerships. Welcome to you both to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you, Rob.
I'd like to start with you, Jennifer. What is the Essential Care Partnership Pilot Program?
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the interest, Rob. This is, as you mentioned, it is a pilot of something that is brand new in Northumberland County. And it is an initiative that we have launched at Northumberland Hills Hospital on our first floor. Those who have visited the hospital will know that our first floor is our post-acute area, and that includes the restorative care unit, our inpatient rehabilitation unit, our palliative care service, and our integrated stroke unit. And we have launched a pilot of something that is known in Ontario as the Essential Care Partner Program. And it was an idea of the Ontario Caregiver Organization, and it is a concept that has been very much advocated for by caregivers and patients in our community. And we are piloting it at NHH to do 2 things. It will help to bring caregivers who we know play such a critical role in supporting patients throughout our healthcare system, not just in hospitals, but throughout. And it will help, we hope, caregivers to identify them to the caregiver, to the care team, as more than a visitor, someone special to that patient. So identify the caregiver, include the caregiver as part of the care team, to include them when decisions are being made and support is being provided. And last, and certainly very important, to support the caregiver, because we know that many caregivers are bearing a lot in our system and many are burning out. And so we want to avert that and to support them.
Who is eligible? Who is a caregiver? Can you give us an example?
Well, anyone who the patient says that they may be. An example I might give would be a patient who might be admitted to our restorative care area. They may be in their late 80s, and they're admitted following a fall. And maybe they have one daughter, and that daughter lives on the West Coast. And so the daughter isn't immediately able here to be a caregiver and support, but that patient has a very close relationship with their next-door neighbor. And that next door neighbor has been instrumental in helping them stay in their own apartment, help to get groceries, maybe drive to the occasional appointment, and is a trusted person in their circle, maybe doesn't have legal status, but is a trusted person. And so our aim is that every patient who is admitted to a bed on the first floor of the hospital is invited to identify their person, one or two essential caregivers who are important to them, who they trust, who they see as key supports, both when they're in the hospital, but also when they transition home again.
Would this also include, though, the things that we would think obvious, husband, wife,
Yes.
son, daughter?
100%. It's whoever the patient identifies that special person or persons to be.
When talking about emotional, psychological, or physical support, what are we referring to?
It again, it can be a range of things. I think what's important to understand is that by identifying someone who is more than a visitor to you when you are an inpatient, we are not saying that that person is going to do the work of the healthcare professional. That person is simply recognized and is embraced in the circle of care as being an important part of that care team based on what the patient has said.
I appreciate the term patient care team, but could you maybe break that down a little bit and tell me who would be included in a patient care team?
Sure. So you might have your, if you're admitted on the first floor of the hospital, you might be under the care of a nurse practitioner. You might have some breathing issues. So maybe there's a respiratory therapist who comes to support your care. You may be having physiotherapy. And so there would be a physiotherapist assistant who might be helping you. You might have to, have a test in the diagnostic imaging department, and you might have to go to diagnostic imaging to receive an X-ray or a CT scan. The care team is that whole circle of both regulated and unregulated professionals who support the patient.
What do you mean by collaboration then? What does that entail?
In terms of how we built the pilot program, oh, that's a great, that I think that's what's really special about this. It's a great question. We have wanted to stand up what was originally called as caregiver ID and then morphed into the Essential Care Partner Program for quite some time. In fact, it was identified as one of our strategic priorities in our strategic plan. But as you can imagine, there are many, many priorities in a hospital at any one time. And so we needed to pick the right unit where it was appropriate and the right time. And we wanted to co-design it with the members of the team so that it was informed by all of that wisdom that's in the group. So we worked with our Ontario Health Team of Northumberland, who said, look, we can support the project management of this. We can do some research to see how other organizations have done this. We can liaise with the Ontario Caregiver Organization to say, what are some of the tools, templates that maybe you have developed to help with policy guidance, to help with other materials, so that we're not recreating the wheel and we're learning from the experience of others that maybe have done this before us. And so the Ontario Health Team of Northumberland supported the project management and the project team pulling us together. And they also brought patient and caregiver voices. Howard Goodfellow is one of the essential care partners from the OHT who's been advocating for this somewhere in the county. And together we were able to make it happen. Also in that working group was an interdisciplinary representation of the care team, to use that phrase again. So we had nurse practitioners, we had social workers, we had nurses, we had ward clerks, we had physiotherapists, we've had members of our leadership team, we've had people from privacy, health records, a whole wealth of souls, including representatives from the hospital's Patient Family Advisory Council, to help co-design using the Ontario Caregiver Association model what will work in this place, in this community, at this time. And that's how we arrived at the pilot notion and why we chose the post-acute area on that advice of that team.
Howard, I'd like to bring you into the conversation now. How did you first hear about this pilot program?
I guess the and thank you for the question. Jennifer and I had an early days on the Ontario Health team. And we happened to find some information about what was then called a caregiver ID. And this goes back several years ago. Then we had and we started looking at it. Got excited because for us, they actually have toolkits. We're not reinventing. We're a little part of the healthcare. So I think for certainly myself and for Jennifer too was we're not reinventing the wheel. It has been done. We believe Northumberland is special because we are small enough to have relationships with all of our community partners. We sit around the table, we talk to each other, we, help each other in different ways. So we're large enough that, and Ontario Health team represents, close to 100,000 people in this area. And we've got all of these different resources. So that was really the, kind of get started. We started a couple times, stopped, started again, and as said, really under the leadership of Jennifer, who was able to get this at the hospital level.
Howard, why did you want to become involved? What motivated you?
Simply in 2017, I became a caregiver. My background's engineering. My life changed. My wife's a nurse, so I always kept saying, "This is unfair. I'm in the you should be caring for me. How can I care for you?" So that's kind of what had the journey got started. As you start, I say, as a caregiver, I suddenly started to realize that there are silos around. There are problems of communication. And also this feeling very much that in some of these settings, you're a visitor. I like the word that Jennifer says, that we're not part of the care team. But as time went on, I suddenly realized that I really bring the unique experience. I have, in a few months, will have been married to my wife for 60 years. I know this lady. I know the needs, the symptoms, the behaviors. And so that actually got me thinking in terms of, how where and get excited about this pilot project.
Was there a particular experience or something that happened that sort of gelled in your mind the need for this kind of a relationship?
Yeah, I think the for myself, I consider myself fortunate that I have some understanding of the healthcare field. I had been working at, had been on had some board experience at hospitals previously, and the so the I started to see how complex it was to navigate the healthcare system. I think also experience as a caregiver in some ways. My wife has Lewy body dementia. It's a progressive disease. So there's periods of time where you, it's not like something suddenly happens. It's slowly. So you have some time to try to figure out how to navigate You know what's coming. You develop that. So I think by that's what I really saw was that it was difficult to navigate, and I had some time, but I also saw that how can I help others? We need to find a way.
Jennifer, will people need to be trained to do this, or is it just something that you step into?
Yeah, it's a absolutely. So we embarked before we launched this initiative on the 7th of November officially. So it's brand new. And before we launched, we introduced a mandatory education program for the staff in the areas where we are running the pilot. And it really is, in many senses, what we're doing is we are formalizing practices that were informally happening on that particular unit quite regularly. There are areas where patients tend to have longer lengths of stay. They may often have they may be quite elderly. They may often have a dementia diagnosis or some delirium. And so it was a practice that was informally there. But it was very important to us that we had consistency. It's one thing to introduce an idea of a program. It's quite another to make sure that it moves into practice and that individuals embrace it. And so we started with education, and that continues because staff are coming and going in the unit all of the time. So that will be an ongoing effort. And then on the other side, if you look at our website under our patients tab, we have a whole new section now for the Essential Care Partner Program. And we actually have the education, the module that was developed for the caregiver to go through, and it's available for anyone to look at on our website.
Howard, have you been through this training?
Yes, I have, and have. I think the it was a the exciting part for myself to be part of the team working on this. Jennifer used the word co-design, which is our dream, but it actually was a good example in terms of we had caregivers sitting their input into the as the program, the pilot program was being developed.
What did you learn that stood out to you?
It's a good question. I learned many things. I think the most important thing I learned was that, and I think Jennifer touched on it, is our goal to have this consistent program across these diverse settings, because our dream is to have this countywide, to have this in Northumberland. And I can give an example in terms of or just thinking about, I have more than 10 different touch points within our region. My wife has a complex health case. So the idea is be able to be proud to walk into everywhere. I have a caregiver badge that applies to in all of these different settings.
And when you say a touch point, we're talking about different doctors, nurses, people with different
Yeah.
specializations. Every time you go in, you're identified in this manner. Is
That's
that
right.
correct? Okay,
Yeah,
good.
yeah. So
Jennifer, are there any limitations to what a caregiver can do, or is the book wide open?
no, the book is definitely not wide open. We are still within a hospital setting, which is a highly regulated setting, and for good reason. One of the you mentioned the education document that was co-designed by the team. The other thing that we co-designed, and you'll also find it on our website, is something called our Moments of Care. And it color-coded on the recommendation of our working group using a standard streetlight, red, yellow, green, visual. What is perfectly appropriate for a caregiver to be supporting the patient with, and what is maybe something they should be asking a question around for maybe their nurse or a member of the care team if they're not quite sure. And then what is absolutely red and not the domain of the caregiver, but the domain of the healthcare provider. So I think that we were able to create this several page document that we co-designed together that gave really clear guidance around the activity that is typical when one is in a hospital, and what the guidance is to, and it was covered as well in the education program.
No doubt, when somebody is involved in this way, things can get sometimes emotional or very high stress. And I just wonder, what's the role of advocacy for the caregiver in this program?
Howard, I think that's a great question for you to start with. You're very much an advocate for your wife.
Yeah, well, I think the clear role is for my is to kind of reduce caregiver stress. That's what we're trying to do, and trying to build the trust between families and the care team. And and certainly I had an opportunity as we were working on this pilot program to try to keep saying we need to keep things simple. I have from time to time also found myself in the hospital environment. I've been, you have stress, you have a lot of things happening at that time, and it has to be simple and complex, and make sure that everyone can kind of see the value itself.
And Rob, I think I would add to that what the word team is really important. It is really with placing that patient at the center and doing all we can together by working together to make sure that their experience and that their care is as positive as it can be. And we know that there are insights that caregivers often have about patients that, as healthcare professionals, we might not have the liberty or the time to gather. And they may be small things. They may be this individual enjoys a warm cup of tea before they go to bed at night and it helps them sleep. That may be a small thing, but if it is an important thing to that individual, it's something that maybe the caregiver can help us understand.
Jennifer, in some cases, there is a need for substitute decision makers or someone with the power of attorney. How does that work?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. It's definitely a question that we have worked hard to be very clear about within our own teams. The new essential care partner role, if one is an essential care partner and we wear and wears the new badge that we're giving them when they come into the hospital, wearing that does not replace the need for clinicians to consult with the substitute decision maker or the formal POA if that person is different than the essential caregiver. We always defer to the Healthcare Consent Act, and the law continues to honor that. So if there are matters that need to be decided by the substitute decision maker, and that substitute decision maker is not the essential care partner, that still needs to run its course. But remember, the patient has identified the essential caregiver as their person at that moment of time. And so we can honor that and still honor the law.
So going back to your earlier example of the daughter that lives far away and the next door neighbor, the hospital still has to go back to the daughter if they have
100%.
power of attorney.
They may be power of attorney on the West Coast, but and that's an important, those conversations still need to occur.
Jennifer, another question just to follow that up. What if there was an outbreak, like when we had COVID, for example? What kind of access would the caregiver be given, say, as compared to a visitor or someone else from the public?
The pandemic was actually one of the drivers of this whole idea of caregiver ID. And that phrase, we are more than just a visitor, emerged at that time. Because you may recall, we certainly recall it here, that there was, when the pandemic occurred, there was so much fear and so much lack of knowledge. There was actually a directive issued to hospitals that visitors pause. Volunteers were paused. So we learned firsthand what it is like without those individuals here at the bedside. We saw what it was like. And in fact, one of the positive outcomes of the tragedy of the pandemic was a respect and awareness for that. And I think that has been a real help in driving the work forward. And today we have said if an essential caregiver it, in the event, let's all touch wood, that we return to a pandemic situation, the essential caregivers with the appropriate training, given the appropriate personal protective equipment, would be permitted, if they so choose, to come into the unit to visit their person. And that is a major difference with this versus the general visiting population.
Howard, this is a pilot program. How do you feel about this being a pilot and not something that's just being implemented right away?
We had some discussion certainly about that. I think as a kind of an outsider to the hospital and to the environment. I now realize that it was a very good decision to make it a pilot, to be able to, you know, and I think there is, from my own background, I'm used to in the business world, things that are decisions happen. But we aren't doing things that affect someone's life and the issues and the so I now have a different appreciation the importance of policies and procedures and you know I was amazed to watch under Jennifer's leadership to be able to build a team with all these different disciplines and the idea to you know Jennifer has other jobs at the hospital, for sure, but the importance of of making sure that and we're going to adjust this. It's a pilot. We're learning things along the way that we can then sort of roll out from that. So, if you'd asked me before we started, I would say, why don't we just launch this? Now I realize the wisdom of a pilot project.
Jennifer, how much does this program cost?
There isn't a net cost to it. We've been fortunate to be able to use materials and research from the Ontario Caregiver Organization. I mean, there's the printing cost of documentations. There's certainly the time cost of the members of the working group who have come together. We see it not as a cost, but a benefit to the system. And if you have an opportunity, the Ontario Caregiver Organization of Ontario has this fabulous resource. Their website is a set of fabulous resources, including a 24/7 support line for caregivers that is always available. And we've been able to tap into those resources and literally just give them visibility. And so we're not recreating any wheels. We took what was set out by our senior team as a strategic priority to improve the experience of both patients and caregivers in the organization, but also the care team, because we think that this will also, and we'll see when we do our evaluation in February, what is the net impact of this on everyone involved. And we hope that it raises all boats. That's the aim. And then with that, we hope to be able to expand it. But in terms of a net cost, No, it's negligible.
Howard, I'm going to ask actually both of you the same question, but I'll start with Howard. What is the greatest challenge you see in offering this kind of program?
I think the greatest challenge is, and I'm going to take it from a caregiver side, from that perspective, is to recognize this caregiver stress. And I think the and you know, and I would like to also point out that you may not recognize, but over 80% of healthcare hours are provided by unpaid volunteer caregivers. 80% of those. So that, and if we actually look in Northumberland County, we have 20,000 caregivers as our range of estimate. Think what they provide to the to our healthcare system. But our big concern is more than three out of four caregivers report close to burnout, overstressed, overwhelmed. And that's where I think the risk is always, and that's, obviously one of our points is trying to reduce caregiver stress. So I think that's from my side, from a caregiver, where I put a high risk, but the rewards can be amazing. So,
Jennifer, how about you?
I think it is the instances of individuals who simply don't have anyone. And unfortunately, those exist where someone may be a patient in the hospital, but does not have either a formal POA or a caregiver in their social personal circle. And they are literally all alone. And I think one of the pieces of information that I'm curious about gleaning from the review is how many individuals did not participate in the program. Maybe not by choice, but because they didn't have anyone to draw on. And I think that again is something we would need to look at as a system because there are inequities there. Howard spoke very eloquently about the burden on caregivers. We, all of us, someday in our lives will be caregivers. We have all experienced it, all three of us. And it is an honor and a privilege, but it is a task. And if we, as our population ages, and we know in Northumberland we are aging rapidly, we are going to live longer with more chronic conditions and rely more heavily on those kind souls who are in our circle. And we need to be thinking about those too who don't have anyone in their circle and what we can do to support them.
We've talked about this in the context of people who are generally older in the demographic. But does this apply to younger people, or and how does that work?
Exactly the same principles would apply. It is less likely on the post-acute floor, but not impossible. I think we will have more experience with that should we be fortunate to get to that point to expand this to our second floor, our medical floor. But I think really the demographic of the patient population on the post-acute floor tends to lean more to seniors and beyond.
Jennifer, what has to happen to make this successful?
Evidence of impact. I think it's a big change management project. We're formalizing something that was previously informal. And I think evidence of impact. How does the existence of this program shape the experience of the patient, as measured in our experience surveys? How does it shape the experience of the caregiver? How does it support smooth discharge planning? How does it support reduced readmission rates? How does it impact alternate level of care designation? How does it impact falls, hydration? There are so many different points we can measure, and the impact will be seen in that evidence. And we're very interested in seeing that. And our team is hard at work on that right now.
So when does this flip over from being a pilot to being something permanent?
Well, we've committed to evaluating in February. We have been very thrilled at the support from senior leadership, from our board, and most importantly, with every member of the team and the Ontario Health team. There is a lot of excitement, I think, at the circle of what we call the Collaboration Council of the Ontario Health team, because I think there is a curiosity of how this will work in this setting and an interest in how it might work in other settings in our county. I'm thinking long-term care homes. I'm thinking hospice settings. I'm thinking home and community care settings, primary care settings, and how can the OHT help us to enable that?
Howard, how many people have signed up so far? Do you know?
Two.
Two confirmed,
That's what I have.
several in the pipeline. Yep.
So, where do we go from here?
Well, I'll start, Howard.
Go
You
ahead.
tell me. From our perspective, as a hospital, we evaluate. I think it's been very interesting for us to see the interest in this at a patient and caregiver level. There is a lot of interest in it, and I think we will simply have to see what the data tells us when we're evaluating it. But our hope is that we can evaluate it, demonstrate the impact, and then expand it through the hospital, and then build islands in the community where the Essential Care Partner Program can be born and connect all those islands eventually to a countywide vision.
Howard, did you have anything you'd like to
Yes,
add?
yeah, as an advocate, I actually did just yesterday have a discussion with the person in strategic communications at the Ontario Caregiver Organization. And I'm talking to them about home care. And I'm talking about in terms of helping them and their resources they have available, and try, as Jennifer said, is kind of reaching out into the community. I have a lot of healthcare workers walk through my door. Every one of them, I talk to them about this program, and trying to also help to make sure that. I say that I'm looking at it from a caregiver stress point of view. How can we improve that? Also, looking in terms of just reminding there's so many resources that are available. And on what Jennifer said again, the big thing with the Ontario Caregiver Organization is a 24/7 helpline. And as a caregiver, it never happens if you need a call in the daytime on a Monday. It happens, 3 o'clock in the morning somewhere, and you're trying to decide as part of it, does my wife need to go to Emerge? Or where's a resource? And they have a helpline which doesn't just, there's a real person. And they will walk you through that. And so I hope also in terms of just helping other caregivers has come my focus. And I think the Essential Care Partner Program is it's so important as a part of
Howard
that.
Goodfellow and Jennifer Giller, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you for your interest, Rob.
Thank you very much, Rob.
That was Howard Goodfellow. a caregiver advisor to the program, and Jennifer Gillard, Vice President, Patient Experience, Public Affairs, and Strategic Partnerships at Northumberland Hills Hospital. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.